Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. We have a fascinating guest today, and he is in another part of the world. We are going to be talking about haunted spaces, sacred places, places around the world, about a field guide that if you want to visit the unique, the unusual, well, we've got the man that can tell you a great deal about that. His name is Brian Houghton, and we're talking to him. He's in Greece. Brian, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me on.
Well, Brian, you have such a fascinating background. You're a man that is very much involved in archaeology. In fact, I want my listeners to know a little bit about you. You were born in Birmingham, England. You have studied European archaeology at the University of Nottingham. You've done archaeological projects, been very much involved with them in England and in Greece and also at the Warwickshire Museum. You've got a master's in philosophy and Greek archaeology at Birmingham University. And you had a fabulous book, and I believe we did an interview in the past about hidden history, lost civilizations, secret knowledge, and ancient mysteries, which is just an incredible piece of material. And now you've come out with Haunted Spaces, Sacred Places. Why has the folklore grabbed you in the way that it has? What's so intriguing about archaeology and doing this research for you as a person?
Well, I think the first thing that inspired me was that so many separate places throughout the world, separate ancient places, have such similar legends. So they have legends of fairies, giants, witches, the devil. They all seem to attract the same kinds of legends, and I just wondered why this was, and was there any other connections between the sites? And I think in combination with archaeology, folklore brings in some fascinating new information.
Now, you are also a member of the Folklore Society in England, and you are a consultant for the UK-based research and investigative organization, Parasearch. And when I was going through your material, I mean, you went from New Grange and the monuments of the Boyne in Ireland all the way to Lake Titicaca. So we're going to try to cover a few of these things. Let's start off with the very first item in your book, and it's about the New Grange and the monuments of Boyne in Ireland. And I may not be pronouncing that correctly, so if I'm incorrect, please correct me.
Sure.
Give us a little bit of history about that.
Well, basically, it's this area of the Boyne, which is about 30 miles north of Dublin, is an area absolutely rich in prehistoric monuments. And the most important kind of monument in this area is are called passage graves, which is basically a tomb from the Neolithic period, about 4,000 to 2,500 BC. And there's about 40 of them in this area, and I guess New Grange is the most famous of the passage graves. It's been reconstructed. It's a huge green mound, and it has lots of decorated stone, decorated megalithic art, the monument dates to about 3,200 BC, and it has all sorts of legends connected with it, and with fairies and various Irish mythical chieftains. And it has this absolutely fascinating phenomena on the midwinter solstice every year. There is, and the sun shines through the front of the monument and illuminates the back passage of the monument for just a few minutes on about the 21st of December every year. So, and this is an ancient piece of engineering that the sun comes through a hole in the front of the monument, the roof, and illuminates the back passage and shines on some of the decorated stones. So it's kind of a cross between engineering, archaeology, and folklore, really. And this is probably the most interesting monument in this area, but there are many, many others, some not so well known in this area of the Boyne, north of Dublin.
As we're advancing in technology, I think that we are discovering so many more various areas and are able to research them, I think, a little bit more accurately than those in the past. Now, with this particular area, when you write about it, you talk about the wonderful writing. They have ring marks, spiral patterns, dot and circles, and you go on about this, but you say a number of these stones were carved on their hidden sides so as not to be visible to anyone in the tomb, which is most curious. If they were not to be visible, how were they discovered?
They were discovered when the tomb was excavated and some had moved out of place. The soil had eroded and some had been moved. So in this way they were discovered. Why they were inscribed on their hidden side, I really don't know. I can only think of one reason, and that is perhaps they were reused from an even earlier monument. And this earlier monument possibly had the carvings facing outwards. I don't think this is particularly likely, but it's just one possibility. Otherwise, there is just some ritual significance that we just don't know about, and there was some reason to have them facing away from the people who entered the tomb. I just don't know.
Newgrange, Noth, and Douse. Those are three locations. They have been designated by the World Heritage Site by UNESCO, or designated a World Heritage Site, excuse me, by UNESCO. And I found that intriguing that they were singled out for that kind of representation. How can UNESCO do that, and what difference does that make when they designate a site in a country?
Well, it should give it protection from any unauthorized excavations or work. That's the first thing. Second, it can give money to restoration projects, and this has happened with the prehistoric city of Mohenjo-Daro in Pakistan, which is also a UNESCO site. So it does bring it to the attention of the world that it's an important site for everybody, and it gives them funding to do any restoration work and excavation that's possible. So I think it's those things that that it makes the site more public and gives it a bit of money to help restore it and keep it the way people want it.
Well, that's wonderful. That's really great that there's that opportunity. Let's go to another locale in England. England is loaded with so many of these sites. There's the Avebury Ritual Landscape, and the photos that you include in your book are just wonderful. But there are these massive, massive stones. But I was also intrigued how you made a statement that stones had personality, and also that there was a woman, Edith Oliver, who was a cousin of the actor Laurence Olivier, and I should say Edith Olivier, in her autobiography, Without Knowing Mr. Walkley. She talks about a unique experience that she had in this area. Tell us that story, and tell us about these stones that have personality.
Yeah, well, Olivia says that, I think it was autumn in 1916, she was driving through the English countryside between the local towns of Wiltshire and Marlborough, close to the Avebury monuments, and she arrived at the village, and the actual huge stones of the Avebury monument are actually inside the village. The village has been built around them. And she took a walk along an avenue, one of the stone avenues, climbed onto one of the earthen banks that had been built in prehistory, and saw inside the earthen banks what you thought were the booze, shows, lights, entertainers from the village fair, and never said anything about it and drove off. And I think it was many years later she mentioned this to her friend, that there'd been a fair at the Avery Stones, and the friend told her that there'd not been a fair there for over 50 years, so she must have been mistaken. And basically that's it. But one thing about this story, which is a fascinating story, I think she believed she'd somehow seen a scene from the past.
Mm-hmm.
But she also had a couple more of these visions, perhaps, one of which was Cornwall in southwest England, when she said she saw the sunken land of Lyoness beneath the sea, with towers, domes, spires, battlements, etc. So I'm not sure how seriously to take her story after saying she saw a sunken city. So I don't know how subjective her sighting of this fair at Avery was. It's a pity there was no one else with her, I think.
I do know from conversations I've had with people that have had similar experiences being in various locales. There's a trigger, and they honestly don't know what it is. And they seem to walk into what I'd call a time warp. And for just a moment, they have the opportunity to experience that time warp. And it's so intense and such a shock to them, they retain the memory and the clarity of it. And it is. It's a very odd sensation. You can no more explain it than a man in the moon. There's nothing in the way of proof that you can give. But it's really quite a fascinating experience. And the fact that what she had witnessed was like about, what, 60-some-odd years earlier, it's absolutely, absolutely amazing. Now, let's go to the Courtrai Cathedral in France. I mean, you've got all kinds of sites in England. It's just amazing to read about all these sites. Why do you think there are so many locations in England itself that are so notable and that people have had such incredible experiences with?
I think it could be a similar explanation why there are so many ghosts in England. I think living in Greece, I know it's a very sunny, bright place. England is a fairly dark, not, I wouldn't say gloomy, but fairly misty, even in summer, quite misty. And kind of mysterious, not all of it, not the cities, obviously, but the countryside is fairly misty, fairly mysterious looking, and has a certain heavy atmosphere, I think, especially around the ancient archaeological sites. And I think this perhaps suggests or breeds some of this atmosphere, some of these feelings. That you certainly wouldn't have the same feelings here in Greece, I don't think. So perhaps it's the atmosphere, the climate itself, the environment of the country itself.
That's a very good point. That may contribute a great deal to it. Let's talk about the cathedral in France. You have a wonderful bit of information regarding it, that the town of Courtrai was named after an Iron Age Celtic tribe called, or Celtic, depending on who's pronunciation is going to be used, called the Carnutes.
Yes.
What intrigued you about that?
Well, it was the connection, I guess, between the Christian and the pagan, because it appears that Chartres Cathedral was built on some kind of pagan site, possibly used by the Carnutes, this Iron Age tribe. And I just wondered why the cathedral was centered right on top of this pagan site, if it was such a thing. And rather, I mean, there's a lot of countryside there to place a cathedral in, and it was placed right on top of it. And that was one of the things. And also, it's a fascinating place. It has one of these labyrinths built into the pavement inside the cathedral, which is also fascinating, I think. So these two things I think, fascinated me about Chartres.
Did you walk the labyrinth?
No, I haven't, no, no.
I was going to ask you if you had had a unique experience. The labyrinth has brought some interesting, what do I want to say? I'll use the word experience again. To people, when they choose to walk it, it has become very popular. And, mm-hmm. you know, within certain organizations here in the United States, they lay their gardens out with a labyrinth. And your term of the prayer labyrinth is, you know, it's got a diameter at this location of 42 feet.
Yeah.
And people here in the U.S., when this was brought to our attention, it could have been about 10 years ago or maybe even more, they felt like they were working through something. It was just a very prayerful, meditative experience.
Yeah.
It was very meaningful to them, and I was quite interested in the fact that they had so frequently very special experiences because of the concentration it took to pay attention to what they were doing. They had to be very mindful of how they
yes.
walked the labyrinth.
Yes, and I think some of the devotees that follow the labyrinth at Chartres actually do it on their knees, don't they? So it takes them even longer, it's even more difficult, I guess.
You bring up information about Charlemagne, a couple of the locations, there's a very strong association with him. But let's go visit Italy. Let's go talk about the Etruscans and their labyrinth. And the Etruscans,
yes.
why are these considered so fascinating and so mysterious?
I guess for two reasons. The first is that they were the culture immediately preceding the Romans, who are so well known. But relatively speaking, the Etruscans, there is so little known about. Secondly, is that their language has never been translated, and it's not a European language. It's probably a Near Eastern language, perhaps coming from somewhere in Turkey, but it's never really been translated. So I think therein lies the mystery with the Etruscans, probably mainly their language.
Now, the particular site is Porsena, and
mm-hmm.
what you discovered when you were there, and as you mentioned, they were prior to the Romans. Now, the Romans were highly respected, even to this day, and regarded mm-hmm. in awe by many architects and many engineers, because of what they developed. The Etruscans had a sewage system. They had irrigation. They had drainage. They collected clean water. I wonder if the Romans learned from them and, as it said, stood on their shoulders of experience and knowledge, because the Romans were very good at that, being able to absorb what was the best of whatever culture they decided to conquer and or integrate with. They would pull out the information from them. Do you think that's what enabled them to move forward, the Romans, with their engineering?
Without doubt, I think they took a whole lot from the Etruscans, and the Etruscans are really not known for it now. It's the Romans who are known for it. But as you say, the Etruscans had sewage systems, drainage systems, all sorts of organizing, engineering for fresh water especially. So I think the Romans certainly took from them, and they're the ones who are known for it now, not the Etruscans. So that's part of the mystery. It would be an immense help if someone would translate the Etruscan language, and perhaps one day they'd be as well known as the Romans. But this is the difficulty at the moment. No one has successfully interpreted their language.
We're going to shift to Malta. And Valletta, Malta, that is what you call the Maltese Archipelago. It consists of five islands in the central Mediterranean Sea, and Malta is one of those. Now, Malta's quite old, and you have this exquisite photograph in here of the sleeping lady. It reminds me of the island up in Alaska that's off in the Captain Cook Inlet in Alaska. They
mm-hmm.
have an island up there called the Sleeping Lady, and her form looks a great deal like the sculpture that you have here. Now, she's terracotta, and that dates from about 3000 B.C. you have some points of detail regarding Malta that are so fascinating. They had an oracle room. Tell us what you discovered there.
Well, I think it was probably they're not sure where the sleeping lady sculpture was found. It could have been in the oracle room. But most of the wall surfaces at this the Hypogeum, it's called in Malta, where the sleeping lady was found, were actually painted in some kind of red ochre, and there was spirals, honeycomb designs, various artwork on the walls. And this whole structure, the Hypogeum in Malta, is three levels, so you have the various functions of each level, and it's really the whole structure is cut out of the rock. They're not just in Malta, you have these hypogea in France, Sicily, on the island of Crete as well. And it really had multiple functions, and the oldest level I think is about 3,500 BC, the level at the top, and then it gets younger as you work down. And really, the structure has some similarities with Stonehenge, the way the lintels are placed on the two side stones. But it's about 1,000 years older than Stonehenge, and I think they're some of the oldest stone monuments in the world at Malta, and the Hypogeum is certainly one of these.
We're going to ship over to Cambodia. I told you, ladies and gentlemen, he's been around the world, and these are all kinds of places that if you can't figure out where to go for a vacation, check out his book, Sacred Haunted Spaces, Sacred Places. It is really neat. When he said it's a field guide, no kidding. Let's go to Cambodia. I love so much of the art in places like Cambodia. It is so absolutely phenomenal. Let's talk about Angkor Wat. What was it that intrigued you with this area, and why is it so special?
It's really, again, like many of the sites, like Avery, it's a complex of sacred buildings, really. The area is called Angkor, and the main temple is Angkor Wat. I think it dates to about the 12th century. And as far as I know, it's the largest religious building in the entire world. So that's something. And the carvings, as you say, are exquisite. A lot of them figures from Sanskrit epics of ancient India. So you have serpents, goddesses, various strange animals. And I think what I've read on a certain website is allegedly a carving of a stegosaurus, which I mention in the book.
Yes, you do.
Yeah, and it's a very odd thing. It does indeed look like a stegosaurus, and no one has been able to explain what a carving of a stegosaurus would be doing there. Only to say it must be mistaken, it must be a fake, perhaps, because the temple was actually used as a location for the film Tomb Raider, and they thought perhaps some of the crew had carved it at that time. For me, the most likely explanation for it is it looks a bit like a wild boar, and I think that the kind of scales on top of its back could perhaps be leaves in the background, but it is really odd to see all these creatures like monkeys, snakes, and everything from the Sanskrit epics, and then to see what looks like a stegosaurus carved into the middle of them. It is a bit odd.
Isn't it wonderful? There are all of these mysteries that nobody has figured out yet, and it's a challenge for someone who does want to study archaeology. It expands your world and makes you realize a lot has gone on that you didn't even think people of that time. With most indoctrination we get, we seem to think that they're walking around with a club in their hand and they're just dorks in the brain department, and they're not. There's so many cultures and civilizations that have come and gone where people were intelligent like we are. They're capable of technology. advancement, all kinds of things. It's really quite interesting. Let's go to Lake Titicaca before we close out with our visit today. Lake Titicaca has long captured the imagination of explorers and treasure hunters. There's a legend about Lake Titicaca having this city underneath the water, and there was this huge gold chain that's worth probably billions of dollars if it really does exist. What took you to Lake Titicaca?
Well, it was these kinds of legends, actually, the legends of buried treasure, a buried city, possibly hidden gold from trying to hide the gold and various precious artifacts from the Spanish, things like that. And just looking at it, it's just such a beautiful, placid place that it has an air of mystery about it, I think.
There are some interesting things that have occurred. You talk about a legend and how they say in the legend that the lake came into being because of tears of many, many different spirits. And then there was a massive, massive group death of pumas, and their bodies were floating on top of the water. They talk about the floods, which every place in the world has a story about the Great Flood. They talk about that. But I was unaware that there were many islands in Lake Titicaca. I was aware of the people that had the village of reeds. You know, they float right on the water. They live on the water. That's their whole world. But how many islands are out there?
There are three main islands. There are lots of smaller ones, but three main islands. The islands of the Sun and the Moon, and I don't know, I can't remember the name of the other one, but these islands are actually scattered with Incan ruins and Incan sacred places, all sorts of maze-like stone walls and temples and various things. And there has been archaeological work on these various sites quite recently. Although, and this is a point we were talking about UNESCO, none of these sites are in the UNESCO World Heritage Site, so they've got very, very, very little money. So not enough work has been done. It's a huge place, so there really needs to be more survey and excavation on these islands, because we really have only scratched the surface of what's going on, what went on at Lake Titicaca. But I think it was only a few years ago that some Italian organization claimed to have found the remains of a huge ancient city at the bottom of the lake. I was disappointed by that, because I never heard anything since. It's one of those stories that kind of disappeared, and it was one of the stories that got me interested in the first place. And, they had a website. They said, we found an ancient city at the bottom of the lake, and that was it. I never heard anything since. There's no photos of any artifacts or anything on the website, so I'm beginning to wonder about that now.
Absolutely, especially since Jacques Cousteau, and I remember his program on Lake Titicaca, how they went down in a submarine where there's so much silt, there's so much dirt, to really get down to the bottom, if you will, would just be an incredible amount of work. I don't know that anybody would have the money to do it. It would just be...
All the time.
Yes. It would just be just an absolutely phenomenal project. But the legends speak of this city and of the gold, and all of this that's down under this awesome body of water. Brian Houghton, you have been just a delightful guest. Your book is so fascinating. Haunted Spaces, Sacred Places, A Field Guide to Stone Circles, Crop Circles, Ancient Tombs, Supernatural Landscapes. But it's so much more than that. You have so much information. As I said, if you wanted to take a vacation to a place that you've never been before, and you want something to share with your friends, this is a field guide to definitely invest in. Brian, do you have a website for people to go to?
Yes, you can go to my MySpace site. It's just MySpace, Brian Houghton, Brian and HAUGHTON, or you can go to mysteriouspeople.com, which is a site I keep about stories about unusual people. So that's mysteriouspeople1word.com. And you can also contact me from there as well.
Wonderful. He has another book too, Hidden History, Lost Civilization, Secret Knowledge, and Ancient Mysteries. Good material. Brian, thank you again for being my guest.
Thank you very much for having me. I've enjoyed it.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Telephone lines are now open, and if you'd like to call and let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, I would be delighted to do that. We have a great lineup of guests, but let me give you the phone number that you can call into should you want to chat with me today. The phone numbers are 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. We also have a direct line of 530-876-3222. That's one of the joys of being able to be on bbsradio.com. We're able to bring you people from around the world. So if you've heard a show you really enjoyed, know you can always share it with a friend by going to our archives. And you can find out all the information about that on the bbsradio.com site. Check it out, because if you miss something on the Donna Sebo Show, you'll be able to listen to it later on at your convenience. Also, if you have a special story or information you would like to share with me, send an email to Donna at DelphiInternational.com. That's Donna at DelphiInternational.com. And when I'm able to do so, I will be sharing the information you send me with my audience. Now, tomorrow, we are going to have a special program. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking with Malcolm Salter. Malcolm Salter has just been recognized recently by Business Week. His book is called Innovation Corrupted, and we're going to have 45 minutes to an hour with this gentleman, and it is going to be a discussion about Enron. Now, we all have heard about Enron. We know the corruption. We know about different things. But what Malcolm has done with his material is to go into an incredible amount of detail. He went and did tracking. So tomorrow, we're going to be discussing this, and he's going to be sharing some of this detail. So if this is of interest to you, you're not going to want to miss this show. So share it with your friends. Also, we're going to be talking about wind power with Christopher Gillis. That's going to be on Wednesday, and that's important because we're realizing we must have alternative sources of power, and there are ways of doing it, where as you as a consumer, if you're a business person, it can make a difference for you. Also, on Thursday, we're going to be talking about the nonverbal advantage. Carol Kinsey Goldman is going to be my guest. We're going to be talking about body language. Yes, how you can read other people. It's fascinating, and she'll even tell us how you can discern if a person is lying to you. That's an important skill to have. It's a very good one. So anyway, that's our lineup. And then on Friday, we're going to have a Best of Donna. I am going to be on a flight, so I won't be able to do the show live on Friday. I do know that it's an upcoming holiday weekend, and so many of you are going to be about and traveling. Well, I have to be doing the same thing. So we will be giving you that information, and then I'll be coming back live on Tuesday, because on Monday I will also be in the air flying, so I won't be able to do the show. So we'll have a Best of Donna for you both on Friday as well as Monday. So don't call in. You won't be able to talk with me on either one of those days, Friday or Monday. Anyway, if you'd like to let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, here are the telephone numbers to call in to, 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. Those numbers are open and available if you'd like to chat. Now, by the way, for those of you that are listening that are up in Alaska, I'm going to be coming up into the Alaska, or going up into the Alaska area, about the 14th of September. I will have the information and the details in my newsletter that will be going out. So if you or a friend want to meet with me while I'm up in Fairbanks or in Anchorage, you'll be able to do so. The broadcast will be done, as they usually are done, from wherever I am located. Also, there's going to be, for those of you in the state of Washington, I will be appearing and attending the Boeing Parapsychology Expo that is going to be done in October. I'll be in San Francisco in October doing an appearance there at the Wisdom Life Festival. And also, I'm going to be in Tampa, Florida, and I'll be up doing an appearance there. So we've got a lot of good things that are going to be coming up. This is going to be one traveling microphone, but it's always a delight, no matter where I go, to meet those of you that are in those various areas and to have a chance to interact with you, and also to show the wonders of technology and being able to do a broadcast from wherever you are in the country and or the world. I wanted to share some information with you, and I wasn't regarding a green building. Green is the key word. Green business, green products, green energy. This is significant. And I started to share this with you yesterday, but I ran out of time. So I wanted to do it today. Now, this is about the Eco Center, the living building that just recently opened in Lake Worth, Florida this month. It just opened. And, of course, everyone in the community, everybody that has been involved with this and the media are really impressed with what they've been able to accomplish. Now, one of the reasons they're so impressed with this is that apparently it's just not a, quote, green, unquote, building. They call it a living building. And I'm sure there are those of you that are aware of the many different experiments that have been done with living buildings throughout the years. And it's something the only way we're going to learn is by trying. And so it's been a process that has been evolving for a long time. Well, Eco Center has indoor gardens. There's a 12-foot waterfall that is using reclaimed water from the second floor down to the first floor, and it is utterly gorgeous. I've got a photo of it in front of me. It's just absolutely beautiful. And then three floors above this, there's office space and views that look down into this magnificent atrium. And the building has what they call a living machine. And this is patented. It's an innovation that purifies and recycles the building's water. Are you aware that cruise ships have been using a process like this for years? Because a long time ago, and I don't remember the exact date, if you know, give me a call and let me know. But with cruise ships, they have had to have a self-sustaining purification system for the water. There was a long time when ships would just dump the garbage into the ocean. It was just nothing more than a big garbage can. Well, that stopped quite a while ago. So they have to be totally self-sufficient, the cruise ship. So here is something about a building that's doing a simple thing. Now, they said the Eco Center will save approximately 200,000 gallons of water a year by recycling water from lavatories and showers, capturing and storing rainwater, using water-efficient plumbing fixtures, and capturing condensation from the air conditioning system. Very interesting. And it's topped by, this is a green roof, it's topped by a miniature wetland project that's integrated into the building's water system and environmental life cycle. Now, this is what they've also added. They have raised flooring systems designed to maximize the efficiency of air conditioning and airflow. They have individual thermostats and windows in each office, and their exterior is constructed of recycled Chicago brick. They have countertops that look like marble, but they're made entirely of recycled, crushed, bottled glass and special environmentally sensitive concrete. There is a vegetable-based oil that's used in the on the elevator pistons, and they have transportation that is done by an electric car, and they also have bike storage. They have low-toxicity paints, sealants, and adhesives. They've got waterless urinals and low-flow toilets, and they have just really thought this through to the best of their capability. We are evolving very quickly into the understanding that we have to know how to work with our environment. I was talking with someone who is involved in the forest industry this morning, and they said one of the biggest things with education in trying to teach people how everything is so involved with everything else. You know, we humans are not exclusive. We are part of this living environment. So we need to be more conscious about how we affect it, what we do with it. And so here are some people that are really taking a positioning of, well, I call right action. And they're doing the best that they can to bring it to a point so that we as consumers will be able to afford it. I've no idea what this building cost, but I'm sure it was a fair chunk of change, if you will. However, it takes people like this to begin the innovations so that eventually then they are going to be so easy to acquire, the cost is going to be negligible. And that is something that we're all looking forward to. I'm also looking forward to having a Rosie like in the Jetsons cartoon that I've watched every once in a while for years, and I just love her. She's the robot that does it all. Really great. But that's coming too. I hope it's in my lifetime. I really would like that in a self-cleaning house. Yes, that's a good thing. Well, I know, but I can dream, can't I? Okay. This is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756 and also 530-876-3222. All I need from you is your first name or your initial, and then after that, you're welcome to ask me, after I give you information, you're welcome to ask me about anything that you like. So give me a buzz if you would like. 877-876-5227, 888-815-9756. Lacey McKay has a delightful short poem that I enjoyed when I read it, so I thought I would share it with you on this absolutely gorgeous, gorgeous day in the Pacific Northwest. You would never know that it was raining sheets of water a short time ago. We thought we were going to have to all get out our kayaks and our wetsuits. Believe me, we were getting so much rain for the past couple of days. Incredible! And then late this morning, the clouds moved away and the sun's come out. It is gorgeous. It's feeling like summer again. It's amazing. Here's Lacey's poem. When the dawn comes to chase away the black of night, birds sing a welcome to the new day's light and celebrate the morning in its all of its summery delight. And it's accompanied by a beautiful bird just perched perfectly on a stalk of flowers. Oh, hey, I've got a recipe. It's one of Bobby Flay's recipes. If you're like me and you love to watch your cooking shows, I really do. I enjoy Paula Deen. I enjoy so many of these different people. I've always liked cooking shows. My husband thinks I'm nuts, but I really do. I really enjoy them. I find them very entertaining, and I learn all kinds of little things that I can incorporate into whatever I do. Well, I've got this recipe on his basil rubbed pork chops that I think you would really enjoy. So get that pad of paper. We're going to be chatting about that for just a little bit when we come back. Meanwhile, we're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. This is Donna Siebel. We'll be talking in just a moment.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, ttap.com.
Enter the magical world of God's Kiss.
Johnny finds himself at the entrance to a large open valley, framed by high mountains rich in the brown-red colors of the earth. He stands in awe, even a little fearful of the mountain's great size. After all, he's just a little boy and not very tall.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Siebel accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling, and the author Donna Siebel will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Siebel's website, www.delphiinternational.com. That 800 number again, 872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna, and phone lines are clear, 877-876-5227. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, or 888-815-9756. By the way, I know you just heard the ad about Teresa Tapp. I want to say, don't forget she's got a special on. Her birthday is this week. And if you get a book, Fit and Fabulous in 15 Minutes, you're going to get a free exercise DVD. So go check it out. Don't just take my word for it. Go to her website. Find out more about this because it's really worth it. I'm telling you, it works. Yes, absolutely awesome. Again, I'm going to give you some information about pork chops. Pork is one of my favorite meats, and I know a lot of people don't particularly care for it, but I really enjoy flavorful pork chops. And I like this because he has some ingredients in this recipe that I just adore. So I thought you might enjoy it too. So we've got that pad of paper and pen handy. Let's go for it. This is Bobby Flay's recipe, and it is so easy. This is what you're going to need. And, of course, you can double this recipe if you want. You can fix this. If you're having a party, great. You can cut it in half if you want, just for two people, however you want to do it. This is a recipe for four people, however. You need 4 1-inch thick center-cut boneless pork chops, 4 1-inch thick boneless pork chops. You're going to need 16 basil leaves, 8 whole, and then you want to slice 8. 16 basil leaves, fresh is best, and you can use dried if you don't have that, and just adjust it accordingly. You need 8 whole leaves and 8 sliced if they're fresh. 4 tablespoons of olive oil. 4 tablespoons of olive oil. You need some kosher salt, ground black pepper. Then you need 4 nectarines, slightly underripe, halved and pitted. So when you get them at the store, usually they're very much on the firm side. And if you've got enough time for a party, then you may want to, you know, let them sort of ripen at room temperature. Or put them in a brown paper bag with another piece of fruit because the gases help to ripen it a little quicker. You're going to need 4 ounces of blue cheese crumbled, which is about a cup. And then you need 2 tablespoons of honey, 2 tablespoons of honey, and 1/4 cup of pine nuts toasted. And those are easy enough. You just toasted those in a dry, hot skillet. Now, here is how easy this is. You can use this as a grill item, or you can broil it in your oven, however you want to do it. If you're going to use the grill, you want it on high, and you want to rub each side of your chops with a basil leaf and brush with 2 tablespoons of oil and season with your salt and pepper. That's how simple it is. And then you grill your chops 4 to 5 minutes per side or until they're just very slightly charred and they are cooked through. And, of course, you're going to cover them with foil after you put them on a plate because you want to keep them warm. Now, the next step is your nectarines, because you want to brush the cut side of your nectarines with the remaining 2 tablespoons of oil. You grill them cut side down 2 to 3 minutes or until they're golden and caramelized. Then you turn off and grill 1 to 2 minutes or until they're slightly soft. Now, you remove these from the grill, top each of these with some blue cheese, drizzle with the honey, and sprinkle with sliced basil, pine nuts, and pepper. Yum. Good stuff. And you know what? It's healthy. It's good for you. It's really, really good. Now, you may want to try this with feta cheese. It's going to give a whole different taste, but some people don't like blue cheese. Feta cheese is another nice crumbly kind of cheese. And go to your cheese department and find out what other options you might have. But the grilled nectarines are going to be great. That's why they have to be a little bit on the firm side, because if they're totally ripe, they're just going to break apart on the grill, and you don't want that. You want them to be able to cook so that they're going to bring the sugars out. That's what causes the caramelization. And just a couple of other tips here. If you're working with herbs, and we were talking about the fresh basil, if you want to chop them really fast or you want to shred them, you can use scissors. Scissors are great with parsley and other fresh herbs, and you can just snip them right into whatever bowl you're going to be putting them in, and you don't have to clean your cutting board afterwards, not that that's that big a deal. And do you know what? If you have a credit card you really want to put to good use, you can use it for cleaning your countertops. I love these tips. I just think they're great. And you can do it without scratching your countertops. If you're concerned about the plastic credit card, is really a good thing to use. And also, if you put rubber bands wrapped around a tight jar lid, it'll give you enough traction to open up your lid. Good idea. I found that I have these, they're like pot holders. You put them on and it gives you a grip on lids, different size lids. And if you have small hands like I do, it's not always easy to do that. Usually I turn it over to my husband. He's got nice, big, strong hands. He can get them off. But that's okay. I've learned when he's not around, and he's not always around, where I can say, here, dear, would you take and open this jar for me? So you come up with resources, but using rubber bands is a very good idea. Also, if you want to be able to level flour easily, keep a chopstick in your flour canister. That's right. You don't have to use a knife. All you do is have that handy there, and it'll just automatically enable you to level it. And it's nice and long, so if you have a deep canister, you're going to be able to find it easily. Also, if you want to slice a cake, and I've done so many parties, and this is something I love to learn about. You take unflavored dental floss. Don't waste your time dipping a knife in hot water. Use the dental floss. It'll cut cheesecake. It'll cut a mile-high cake. And it does it beautifully. So it is really something. And also, keep a seam ripper in your kitchen when you have those plastic bags that don't want to open for you. Have you ever encountered a few of those? And the plastic that they use, I don't care if you've got the toughest nails in town, you have a heck of a time, you know, puncturing them or opening them. So if you have a seam ripper, va-boom, there you go. And I thought this suggestion was great. If you want to dust a cake pan fast, keep a clean powder puff in your flour canister to lightly sprinkle flour on greased cake pans and rolling pins. People have all these wonderful little ideas. And if you want to create a pantry, all you have to do is hang a clear plastic shoe bag on the inside of a kitchen door to hold spices, kitchen utensils, and gadgets. People come up with all of these wonderful little ideas. So I wanted to share that with you. This is Donna Sebo. We are out of time. Remember, always your master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. We've got an exciting show tomorrow all about Enron and the inside scoop from Real Research. This is Donna Sebo. Hope you can join me. We'll be talking to you tomorrow right here on bbsradio.com. Bye for now.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604. You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.